Oh.
Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memory. They all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2849. That's 2849. Okay. Now, tonight we're going to have Michelle Bless on, and this is her monthly night that she comes on Thursday night. And she and I always have our shows together, and we always do a really good job because Michelle and I are like sisters, and we understand that we've been on the streets. We understand what it's like. And have done quite the same things. She's got some of the things that I didn't do. We've spoken about that before. She's a witch. Yes, she is. I don't think she's a witch. I think she's a blessing. There you go. So, but anyway, one time she, you know, was into the occult. But that's not what tonight's show is going to be on. Okay. Now, first of all, I want to read the mission statement, and Michelle Bless is from Cincinnati. She is a survivor of severe child abuse. She's a minister, she's a chaplain, and she's also a counselor, okay? And so anyway, she has all kinds of things under her belt, and she's someone good to speak to. If you need to, you know, talk to someone in the middle of the night, she too is like a night owl. She and I both. And if you can't reach her by phone, you can text her. It's better to text her, actually. And she'll get back to you. She might be busy on the phone with someone else. I had a night like that last night. And I fell asleep sitting up, and I spilled a whole cup of coffee on myself. That woke me up.
That can happen.
Oh, my God. That made me mad, man. I'm on my new couch, and I got this leather couch. I love it. It's a Chase Lounge it has on it. That's, you don't see that very often. Part of the couch. Mm-hmm. And so I get too comfy, Michelle. Yes, I do. So I had this cup of coffee in my hand, and it landed all over me, for God's sake. So, but we, I'm so mad. It didn't hurt the leather. Everything was fine. But, you know, but
well,
anyway.
I hope it didn't hurt you.
Well, I was a little pink in one area. Yes, I was, because it was hot. I didn't feel myself being that tired. I got back to the Chase Lounge, sat there, had a couple sips, and that was it, gone. You know. But anyway, we're the night owls, and if you need to speak to someone in the AM owls, we are owls. AM owls.
Yes, we are.
We are here, and we are owls. Now, she's a witch, and I'm an owl. There you go. So anyway.
Wow.
We have such a good time. But anyway, yeah, now tonight's really going to be a very good topic. You know, we speak about domestic violence, you know, in October usually, and that's for the adults, you know, and what we went through as children. Well, guess what? February is for teenagers who observe domestic violence at home. And it was actually, it says here, February is Teen Dating Violence Prevention Awareness Month, and Congress first proclaimed February as Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, Prevention Month, in 2010. Now, we don't talk about these things. But I happen to, you know, I sit here and I think, what do I want to talk about? And then all of a sudden, pop, something comes into my brain. And if I don't have paperwork on it, which usually I do, and I do have some here, but I don't feel like digging right now. But so I just popped it into my browser. I have two different organizations that deal with this. So after I read the mission statement, Michelle and I certainly know about this also because we witnessed it. But let's talk about, too, what it does to the kid, okay,
mm-hmm.
The children who, you know, to watch this stuff. And eventually, many times, those kids turn into victims, too, from it.
Yeah.
How does it affect them in adulthood? Okay, well, she and I both can talk about that. Okay, but first of all, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. Number one is educating the public, and we do that a lot, don't we, Michelle? Yes, we do.
You're
especially
doing.
As related, you bet, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, and I'm a stickler on that one, intervention and recovery. Now, I do a lot of presentations, mm-hmm. I have, and the schools, some of them are starting to open again. Let's see what happens, because it seems like they're open for a few weeks and then they're down again. I think they're talking on TV right now. I had
mm-hmm.
heard before I came in the room here in my office that they're thinking about closing things down again. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. You can't even,
mm-hmm.
You know, say, well, I'm going to be here, do that, do this, do that, because you don't know if where you're going to go, it's going to be open. And when you do presentations, I don't like doing it by Zoom, Michelle, because I like face-to-face contact.
Mm-hmm.
I can have body language that way. And I know that, you know, that the people are listening. I can see when they start squirming in their seats. In other words, the topic is getting a little bit too heavy. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you judge your audience. That's what you do. You judge your audience when you give presentations.
Yeah.
And you can't see that with Zoom. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's no good. So, anyway, tonight, Michelle and I are going to, you know, speak both of us about what I just read here. With February is Teen Dating of Violence Prevention Awareness Month. And it's been around since 2010, where Congress had proclaimed February to be 2010, the Prevention Month for Teenagers. Now, you know, we talk a lot about domestic violence and how it affects us. We the adults.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of us have kids. And your children so often are standing there and they're filled with terror. I used to freeze. I would freeze. I'd be like a statue.
Mm-hmm.
And if you knocked me over, I'd break, okay? I mean, I was that frozen. The flight, no, not me. I wasn't able to flee. I froze. I freeze, okay? And but according to youth.gov, okay, youth.gov, those between the ages of 12 and 19 are the most likely to experience dating violence, including sexual assault and rape. All right? Now, what
mm-hmm.
kind of homes do these kids come from, okay? At least 10% of adolescents say that they have been victims of physical violence from intimate partners. At least, that's at least 10%. And girls are most likely to experience violence that often results in behavioral health issues such as drug use, eating disorders, and suicide attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's because of what we are brought up. See, so often, you know this, Michelle, social services will go into a home, and it's not good to go in like once a month or something. If you can get in a little bit more than that, that's better. And number two, what I realized too, is you don't tell them exactly what day you're going to be there.
Right.
What you
do
is
you
give
them. That they do.
Oh, my God. They have the kids standing there like little models or something, whatever. and they're all nice and mm-hmm. clean, and the house is all nice and clean, and all this other stuff. Little do they know, you know, many times what these kids are watching, okay, what they see in these homes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's far better to give a window. Say between Tuesday and Friday, I'll be there between 2 and 3. This way it's vague, and then maybe you can get a better picture of the abuse that these children are watching. And what does
mm-hmm.
it do to their brain? Okay, what does it do to their brain? So I know, Michelle, you'd like to talk a little bit about this, so go ahead, and then I'll take off from there.
I'm just thought, you know, as you were talking, I just started thinking about all the statistics of young girls getting into relationships. We're talking as young as, you know, 14, 15 years old, and get involved with, you know, and they and their boyfriends violently is abusing them, you know.
Yep.
It's you know, and then the deaths of so many young girls under 18 years old that were murdered by their significant others in domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it just breaks my heart. It just breaks my heart. And it's like, how do some of these young girls get attached like that? Well, it can be several different reasons. One big reason, if they are in a household of violence, if they're seeing their mom being abused, you know what I'm saying? It's so easy for them to attach themselves, you know, and to get convinced of a different taste of love, which they call love, but it's not love.
That's right.
You know, they feel like if their boyfriends don't holler at them, or they'll say, well, he hollered at me, but that lets me know he loved me. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
No, that's not love. Or he slapped me, but that lets me know he loves me. I'm like, no, no, that's not love. So, you know, hearing you talk about it, I just started thinking back. Again, like I said, the statistics, and, oh, my God, I don't know if anybody even aware of thousands and thousands of young girls under 18 years old that are survivors of domestic violence. But let's talk about the victims who didn't make it, that were murdered by their boyfriends in domestic violence, and they're under 18 years old. That is an absolute tragedy. Say it.
You know what's so sad about that, too? And I've done it. Maybe you did it, too. I don't know. But I came from such a volatile background. I saw so much. And I was such a tough kid. And I'm a tough
mm-hmm.
adult. And I don't care, because I think that's what keeps me going, one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, because I did see so much, it caused so much anxiety in me. I may have stood
yeah.
there like a statue, but I remember what I felt like, you know, inside. And these girls, when they turn into teenagers, now this is speaking about from 12 to 19 years old, all right,
mm-hmm.
who are witnessing this, you know, whether it be at home or whatever. And what do? They stay with the guy.
Yeah.
The first time a guy slaps them or whatever he might do to them, they should leave him and leave him for good. But what
mm-hmm.
do? I can speak for myself. I would go back and go back and go back. And
mm-hmm.
that was the type of thing that I did even in my adulthood. I would take the punches. I didn't think to myself that he loved me. I was still too filled with fear.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't love. Actually, I thought it was craziness, all right? But I was willing to accept that. And then I kept thinking to myself, well, if I show him enough love, because they usually come from dysfunctional homes, too. We're magnets for each other, you know, we know this.
Mm-hmm.
He'll change. He'll change. But they don't change.
Or it only happened once, or it just... Or it only happened a few times, but I know he loves me. He promised this time he won't do it again. Like, oh, my God.
I know. How often?
I started thinking about, you know, me being a little girl myself and watching my dad beat my mom viciously. I mean, if she wasn't being beat every day, it was every other day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And horrific domestic violence. And I just thank the grace of God, you know, for keeping my mind to be sane. I know so many people who went through one of the things we went through, Carol, and they didn't make it. They are mentally gone on a psych ward. It just breaks my heart. Domestic violence is real. And domestic violence, I'm not getting ready to give you a statistic percentage. I'm just going to go by what I think because I'm not really sure what it is. But I believe domestic violence is happening, and maybe you might know the answer, Carol. They said, I'm only guessing, it's happening like every 7 to 12 minutes or something like that. So can
That's
you imagine
cool.
that? Like someone
That's
is being
cool.
beaten right now. You know, locked in a closet or chained to the bed, or, you know, and then, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you're saying chained to the bed and all this other stuff. Yes, and that's by the parents. You see, this is what happens. Like, I watched all the beatings that my mother took. My mother wasn't a good mother to me, but I felt sorry for her at the same time because she was with this maniac for 17 years. I didn't know them. I wasn't born yet. I was here. He left when I was 5, so I only had 5 years of him. But the point is, at the age of 4, at the age of 5, I remember, you know, I couldn't sleep. I've always been up. I think it's because of the way that I lived, what I was exposed to. I have no problem working night shifts in places, you know. Plus, you get paid a little bit more, okay? That was good, too. But, you know, the point is that, you know, when my father, who was a drunk, I called him my father because that's what I knew him as to be at that time. But when he would leave and he'd slam the front door so hard, you'd think that he was going to break the glass, you know, in the windows, you know. And I would go out to the kitchen. My mother thought I had just come downstairs at that point. Not true. I had witnessed the whole thing. I go into the kitchen. My mother would be slumped on the floor, and I'd take a rag at the age of 4 or 5 years old, and I'd wet it, and I would mop her face. You know, usually hit her in the face. And, you know, at that age, I was becoming like a caregiver to my mother because of what you too, you see?
Yeah.
Now, how do you think that affects a kid?
You're no longer a kid anymore. It's like this is the stuff that we were seeing. That's overwhelming to a child. You're just a kid. And to be thrown into the midst and witnessing something like that is absolutely overwhelming. I went from watching my dad beat my mother, and then, of course, you know, he was beating us siblings, and to whereas when I was old enough, which I was saved at 9, is whenever he would come in drunk or in a rage, I would provoke him. So he would beat me until he passed out so my mother wouldn't get beat. So am I saying the beatings to my mom stopped? No, but they weren't as much once I got up to standing up to my dad. And I got brothers. They were afraid of him. They didn't do it. I did it.
Right.
I was the rebellion one. I was the one that started stuff with my dad so he could be mad at me and not turn his rage towards my mom or my siblings, you know? And I wasn't the oldest or the youngest. And I ended up being a caretaker not only for my mom, but just for my siblings, period. And then keep in mind during that time, I was protecting my sister from being sexually abused, and I was taking it from a family member so she wouldn't get touched, which was my grandfather, you know.
You know, that's kids do that. Isn't that an awful thing to be put in that position where,
yes,
you know, you take on that role to, you know, for the other siblings or for the sake of the other siblings, you're trying to protect. And now I remember even with my brother, he was 5 years my senior, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He'd get into trouble in school. The kids didn't like him. I don't know. I didn't like him either. We won't go there. But anyway, the point is, I remember one day at the age of five, they were throwing rocks at him as he was running down the street, trying to get off the street to get into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was out, you know, we had a little yard in the front, so I was out there, and I saw that they were throwing rocks. And so I started picking up rocks, and I started throwing them at them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So they see this little midget of a child. I'm 4 or 5 years old, throwing rocks at them, and I hit a couple of them, too. And I scared them away. So, you see, we, the siblings, and, you know, whether it be four siblings for the sake of another sibling or for the sake of a parent, many times we take on that role as being the protector.
Absolutely.
And it can start at a very, very early age. And this is, well, you see, now my father never hit me, but I was always afraid that he was going to hit me. He did hit my brother.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother would hide under the covers upstairs, and with me, I would come down the stairs and look and watch and see, you know, can I help? Well, I mean, kids, you know, our brains get screwed up. It says here, witnessing domestic violence changes a child's brain.
Yes.
All right, now we've already given, you know, like a couple of examples. We became the protectors. And we put ourselves in that role to protect or to help the adults or the older sibling, in my case, too. So how does it affect the kid? This is how it affects the kid. This is by womensaid.org.uk. Womensaid.org.uk.
Mm-hmm.
It causes chronic stress, fear and anxiety, can impair brain development. I remember walking around like I was in a fog.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people talk about that, Michelle. You know, that they're like in a fog.
Say that it's something, and then they say, but if they say, you know, I heard that, you know, that you're walking around in a fog. Actually, it's like we're in a different world. It's like our minds wander off. You know,
and then
that's when you start picking up split personalities because for protection, because you become this other person, you try to remove yourself from the situation and make believe that you're somewhere else. Sometimes that brings up split personalities. Very easy for the dark world to come in, but that's another topic. We ain't gonna discuss that. But yeah, it's like, oh, wow, that's deep. When your brain, again, when you are a child and you are taken away from being a kid and having fun, you're thrown into the midst of chaos and madness, dark and confusion, and a very painful situation. That will put your little mind into stress and then anxiety. Nervousness, you know, you'd be afraid. If you hear a noise, you'll jump. You get all these things coming on you at the same time, you know. That's why I don't be surprised when I hear them say, you know, where, you know, we've got a kid who's cutting themselves, or I don't be surprised when you hear a kid wanting to harm themselves or want to take their life, or they run away, or they throw themselves into stuff in the street just to get their mind off stuff. None of that is surprising, you know. And then what is the first thing a kid looks for when they leave home? They look for love. That's why it's so much easier for them to go into games, you know, because the game will become their family. It will show them love instead of being mean or abusive towards them. You get these kids that form a little game. They come together to protect one another.
Right.
It's just
right.
It's just sad, you know. The domestic violence
like
is real
thing,
and it's happening.
One thing leads into another, Michelle. You know, it absolutely does. It does. And what you just said there, I want to kind of like work on that a little bit with the mental health issues, because it causes chronic stress, fear and anxiety,
yes.
Can impair the brain, we spoke about the fog, can affect
yes.
emotional development,
yes, it can.
Psychological and even physical development. I didn't know that one.
That's right. Oh, I did. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. That is true. A child might even go into duress. And you're going to go one way or another. And when I say one way or another, I'm not talking about nothing good. So they're going to do something to take away that pain, to become numb. For me, I started drinking at the age of 2. I didn't even know I was drinking. But my dad, after our bar downstairs in the basement, so I would see these people laughing. They had this cup they drank, and they'd be giggling and acting silly. Or they would fall, and they wouldn't even feel nothing. And they would get injured, don't even feel. And I'm like, okay. That means they just hurt themselves and they didn't feel the pain. So whatever that is in that cup, I want. So whenever my dad was beating me, I wouldn't feel it. So by the time I was 6 or 7 years old, I was a stone alcoholic.
Mm.
You know? At 6 years old, you know, that's when another abuse. Now keep in mind, I'm in the midst of physical abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse. And then 6 years later, I turned 6. And here comes the sexual abuse from another family member. So all this is
right.
going on with me at home, and then I got this on, then here's this added. And that went on for 6 years. And then when I got too old, I was passed on to 2 uncles and a cousin. So where did the cycle change? The cycle didn't change. The cycle got worse.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Then they said, well, you know, she got a bad attitude. But yeah, you sat down and asked what was wrong, what was going on. She's so angry all the time. But have you ever asked that child to look and see why that child is angry?
Yeah,
they,
right.
People feel me looking at behaviors of kids, but don't take the time to sit and find out what's going on. Because believe me, those are flags. Something's going on with that child.
That's right. That's right.
Warning signs.
And that's why they turn
yeah.
to criminal activity at times. You know.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. There's just so much that happens, you know, with children. I mean, okay, it affects the cognitive and functioning, the development, the cognitive functioning, emotional difficulties, depression, anxiety, behavior and peer problems, school, academic, usually recurring events. This is what they go through. So they have a lower IQ many times. Well, why wouldn't they? They can't think about stuff that's going to enrich their brains. Instead, they're thinking about things that are going to pull them. You know, how am I going to get through this day? A child
mm-hmm.
going to school is worried about how they're going to get through this day, okay, and what they're going to go
yeah.
home to. They have usually poorer language skills and, again, attention and memory. That goes along with the cognitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just horrific. Horrific what kids go
mm-hmm.
through, you know, when they do go through this. And then this affects at least 1/3 of preteen and teenage children.
Yes.
And they have been, you know, they've been victimized themselves, even just through their own relationships. They don't know how to choose. I, at this time in my life, in my golden years, I should... you know, like, I should be happier. So I don't want to live with anyone ever again. I was married twice. And both of those marriages, you know, they failed. The first husband was worse than the second husband. I admit that. I was just writing about the towers. I just told someone I know very well and care about
mm-hmm.
a lot about the towers, because when they put that on the Internet, my mind goes boom, because my husband died from the dust and everything on 9/11. Okay, it affected him, his nasal, his congestion,
mm-hmm.
And then it went down even further. I had to keep taking him to the hospital. And, of course, this is all on record, to the hospital, because he had problems with this, he had problems with that. Before you know it, I finally got him to go to, he's very stubborn, I'm stubborn too, he's worse than I am. I got him to go and have tests taken, and it was too late, he already had cancer 3B, as they worded it, 3B. No.
Let's talk about the, I just want to throw this out here. Oh, wow, I'm sorry to hear that, Carol. Yeah,
sure. He died about like two years later. But the point is, he came from a defunct home too. You see, again, we're magnets, and what we do when we come from, you know, children of abuse and all this other stuff, we don't know how to choose properly. And if I had the wherewithal, okay, if I had a little more understanding, you know, of relationships, if I had more, you know, people in my life that had good relationships, then maybe I would have had something to learn from, okay?
Well, I want to say this. Someone asked me, this is so interesting, someone asked me the other day, what is the signs for domestic violence? How can you tell if a woman's being abused? First of all, it really would be hard to detect from a woman who was isolated. Because the men ain't gonna let her out the door. And see, that was the thing with my mom. She wasn't around nobody. She wasn't around. It was kept hidden, you know. But then some of her siblings that were not afraid of my dad, that came over, and they would see some things. Oh, he would straighten up at that moment because he was scared of my mom's family. Oh, he was. But he would do it in such a way where they wouldn't realize that she, you know. But here's one of the signs of a woman that is abused, because they're, not all women are hidden. There are some that come out and you can pick up on something. A woman that never has her head up, she always have her head down all the time.
Yeah.
And she's real jumpy, real jumpy. Like if you come up on her or a noise, she would just jump, and you just see the fear. That's a sign. The best sign is you want to look to see, you want to help someone, especially in the summertime. They will have on fall clothes. They will have on long pants, jeans, and long shirts and sweaters. I mean, first of all, that's a big flag, big sign something's going on. It's freaking hot outside. But that's a sign that you can look at, you know, if you see it, you look at that. Some people ask me, are there any more signs? Like I said, there's lots of signs, but most of those women are kept hidden. So you don't really know what's going on behind closed doors. I have seen women that were out in public, and the ones I just mentioned is the ones that I pick up on easily. Head always down. And 9 out of 10, they won't have on any makeup because they're not allowed to wear makeup. And they are constantly always in long sleeves, long jackets all the time. Their body parts won't be shown because 9 out of 10, they'll be beaten in their arms, legs, and stuff like that. Very sad. And then the ones that act real scary all the time, they're real jumpy. Those are flags.
Well, you know, a lot of times I've seen people, I've worked with people, worked with adults, and they saw the same things we did when we grew up. You know, they came from families. A lot of times, you know, it's in the family, and then this is the type of adult you turn into, which is what it even says here. And, you know, they cover their body because if they're pretty, say they're a good-looking girl, whatever, they don't want people looking at their body because they don't want to draw attention to their body because, you see, they've been beaten, all right? They're out and maybe they're allowed to go shopping. Yes, in a lot of situations where you have a domestic violence at home as an adult, remember you came from it as a child, you didn't choose properly, and now you have it as an adult. That happened to me, okay? And it happens to a lot of us. So, you know, you cover your body. You don't want guys looking at you. I have guys looking at me, and you just said it. I put my head down. I do that. You know, there was this guy, Michelle, he had a ponytail that was so long, it was braided, and it went down past his hip. I never, that's wild. But,
wow.
I know. So he was opening up a door for me, and he took one look at me. He stepped back and really opened the door, and he gave me a big smile, and I immediately put my head down. Now, look, that comes from abuse.
Of course.
That comes from abuse. And it follows you over into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happens, because when we're kids, and whether we're witnessing it many times, then we become the victim also. The March of Dimes had a statistic. I will not repeat it because I don't agree with it, and I think it's probably changed since then. But there are organizations that have their statistics, but they change too much. So sometimes I'm very careful about giving stats unless I feel comfortable with it. But,
right.
you know, you have to be careful with that. So, but the point is, when you're abused as a child and watching your parents almost kill each other, that's child abuse.
Yeah.
People don't realize that.
Yeah.
That's child abuse.
Absolutely.
Now, we're standing there. The people who are supposed to love and nurture us are beating each other up to the point where the blood is flying. I saw a tooth fly once. I don't remember if it was from my mother's mouth or my so-called father's mouth. I forget. But I do remember all of that. And I was 4 years old. Now, for some reason, I can remember everything from the age of four up.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that I had dissociated, okay? And that I didn't remember so much. I really do, because the memories that come back for years, they hit me, they haunt me, they hit me, they haunt me, until finally one day I said, enough. This is not going to define me for the rest of my life. This is who they were. That doesn't mean that it's who I am.
Right.
I was trying to explain that to someone today, in fact, and yesterday. On the phone,
mm-hmm.
because we cannot control other people's behavior. We can only control our own behavior, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When we're a teenager, we act out because of what we've seen, and maybe it's still going on at home with the domestic
mm-hmm.
violence. And we make mistakes. Yes, we can turn into cutters. I cut my wrist. And, you know, how many times did you try to commit suicide? Oh, you told me once. That's awful. And, you know, the point is...
I stopped counting after 35 times. I lost count after that.
That's horrific.
Yeah, that is. And it wasn't number God that kept me. It had nothing to do with me. So,
well, it wasn't our time to die, man.
Absolutely. It's like, wow, you know, you go to a hospital and they don't think you so many times trying to commit suicide and they keep you, you know... for evaluation, they have a right to keep you up to 72 hours, but you can talk your way out of leaving out every time, and I was. But you would think a person who was a consistent, that means try to commit suicide lots of times, and there's a record of it, yet I can get myself out of there in 24 hours to go try again to kill myself. But this time, do it so they can just find me in the house. Instead of taking me to a nut house.
Yeah. A lot of times in the hospital,
they never sat down and asked me, why are you trying to hurt yourself? I didn't get that. I was being abused so bad.
Right.
That I became numb to the abuse.
See? We were talking about numb.
Medicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were talking about numb last night.
You don't want to feel.
Well, that's just it. So what happens is our brain, you know, shuts off in a certain area, okay? And that's
uh-huh.
why you go into freeze, okay? You go into freeze instead of flight, it's freeze, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And your
okay.
brain can do that also. And a lot of times our brain will put that incident even in a different place, a different part of the brain. And then it comes through years later, and you have another memory, okay, another nightmare, or whatever it is, you know, a flashback, anything like that, and it comes through.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are things that in the AM I talk to people about all this stuff, you know, because this is what I've learned, this is what I was taught. And then we have on our website, I want people to know who's not used to the show, who are listening to their computers right now, that
mm-hmm.
Our website is quite good. Under highlights, it has a lot of information. But if you scroll down on the NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA.org website, okay,
mm-hmm.
if you do that, you come to these red blocks, and each block has a title. And if you click onto any one of those blocks, a menu drops down.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a tremendous amount of articles in these, written by the psychiatrists or the CDC, which I'm not too happy with right now. But some of the other organizations, the Justice Department, I'm not happy with them either, all right, but whatever. But they have their articles, and you can learn a lot of things from the articles. They're well-written. And there are studies that have been done that are solid, okay, and people can learn from that. Now, there's all kinds of information on there for people to learn about recovery, certainly about flashbacks, all the things that people go through because they had childhoods, like Michelle and I and many, 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 many people on NASCA. Now, Michelle is an author, and she wrote a book, Out of the Darkness, The Michelle Bless Story. Okay? And you know, people should know that she's an author, too, and I didn't mention that. I didn't even say who I was. Maybe I'm in a fog. That's what it is. Hey, there you go.
And what was the name of your book again, Carol?
Panic Child, A Harrowing True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect. Yes.
Yes.
And,
I have the book. I read it. So, you know, you were the reason why I realized I wasn't the only one. Yeah.
There's so many people that have read my book. I made it to Japan, for God's sake. I saw these squiggle marks. I didn't even know what those squiggle marks were because I went on Amazon to see how my book was doing some time ago now. And too many publishing companies have my book. They took it. They stole it. I don't care. Look, I don't care about getting, a little bit of money here and a little bit of money there. What I want is the word out about child abuse, okay, and how it can affect you. And, that's what's important to me. Okay, that's very important to me. And I'll tell you what, Michelle, when I wrote my book in 2010 was the second publication of it. In 2008, they said it was too volatile. They made a trailer of it. I had to pay $1,400 for that trailer. I didn't even get to see what the trailer was. They took bits and pieces out of my book and made a trailer. Well, their legal department got a hold of it and said, oh, no, we don't deal with stuff like this. Maybe they deal with butterflies and pussycats and doggies, which I happen to love, pussycats and doggies. But you know what I'm saying. They don't deal with the material that we know about, that we learned about, and that we teach about, that we, you know, whatever we do. They don't know about that stuff. They didn't want to hear it in 2008. So I rewrote it again, same story. Found some mistakes, and they made mistakes, I made mistakes. But people have mistakes in their books. I don't care. The story is there. And in 2010, then Author House picked me up. And when you self-publish, you have to be very, very careful. You have to know all the ins and outs. Otherwise, my controlling husband did all of the deals, all the money deals with them. Well, controlling husband made a mistake because... I don't get any, royalties. I don't care anymore. I did with the first company. I did well. But with the second company, they took my book, and somehow it's with all different kinds of different companies that are selling my book. And quite frankly, there was a class action suit against them.
Mm-hmm.
And people were complaining because they weren't getting it. And one guy got a check for 90 cents. Are you crazy? 90 cents?
Wow.
No. I mean, how sad. So they had this class action suit, and my controlling husband wouldn't allow for me to even pursue that, put my name on the list. I don't care. It made it to Japan. That's good enough for me. Okay? So the point is this. We are the people, the survivors, that can tell the stories. We can do this. We can do presentations. We can work in, like I worked in juvie, you worked in prisons, shelters. I've been in shelters too, you know, working with women. And men. Sometimes, I work with a guy who's, it's not always women who are the victims. That's something we don't talk enough about on the show. I mean, I lived across from a guy and down in Red Bank there. His wife was a damn nut. She beat him up and she beat the kids up too. And the police were called and nothing ever happened. Now today it's better. It's better today, but it's not 100% right. I don't know if it's ever going to be 100% right. But back in 2008, back in 2010, there wasn't that many books out. Now we have a tremendous amount of books. People write poetry also. They blog because people say, what can we do? I'm telling you right now. You can be an author. You can be a blogger. You can write poetry. If you're an artist, you can, draw pictures. I've used them at presentations. I have a lady that I use, she's a survivor. And I say, I want this picture and that picture drawn. I pay her, of course. And use it, There's all kinds of things that we can do to bring forth even more, I'm going to say more awareness, because how long, Michelle, is it going to take to have enough awareness out there for people to become involved. You see, that's what's so distressing about this whole thing. It's like, I'm not going to say people don't care. It's just that they keep turning their heads and looking the other way. There's too much of that still going on. Now, with community, I'm a stickler for community, okay? If our communities would get more involved, okay, with child abuse, and we give them the tools to work with, like I'm thinking about, I have to find one around here. I'm so out in the sticks. Oh, my God. I don't know if there's neighborhood watch here. I don't know what they have. I have to go to the town beneath me at the bottom of the hill. And maybe they'll let me in. Maybe they won't because I don't live in Washington. I live in Oxford, right? So, but I think, if they have their meetings, this is another way. I'm going to look into it. Don't just talk about, cars that are broken into and all this other stuff that goes on. Yeah, you talk about that. But if we could bring in child abuse a little bit so that people could understand what signs to look for, all right, give them handout papers. I have so many papers here. I've made so many copies. Just right off our own website. And then some that I would, get off the browser, whatever, get off the Internet. But, to give them something to look at and to think about. Because how are we supposed to fight these pedophiles, huh? Education, Michelle, education.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I
Amen.
Think.
Amen.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
You bet. So getting back, to the kids, just a little bit back to the kids here. With our communities as they are as such, now in the urban communities, they're seeing far too much violence. And it's considered okay. This isn't a way of expressing yourself. This is a way of creating havoc. If you have a peaceful demonstration, that's one thing. Even in the Constitution, it says we're allowed to have demonstration. Let the voices be heard. Okay, that's our amendment. Freedom of speech. But do it in the right way. But instead, kids are going crazy all over the place. And especially in the urban areas, could be out in California, could be New York, whatever. you know, and you've heard this, I'm sure. If you shoplift $100 worth of something, get a little pat on the hand. Maybe go to jail, maybe don't, for 2 days, 3 days, whatever. So as long as you stay under grand larceny level, which is $1,000, that's grand larceny, right? $1,000 is a grand. They don't consider it like a big deal. And that, to me, is just ridiculous, because when you go out and you steal and all that other stuff, you're committing a crime. Now, our kids who come from homes where they have seen all kinds of domestic violence, and then maybe the violence turns on them, what they do is a lot of times they do run away from home. I ran away from home. I'm sure you ran away from home. You know, because home wasn't where safety was, okay? And so then those kids out on the street, like you said, I don't know, 25 minutes ago, whatever, they should look into the homes of the children to see why they're out on the street, you know, behaving the way that they do. And if those kids don't get help, Michelle, they're going to end up not just in juvie, where I worked at one point, but they're going to end up in prison. Why don't you talk a little bit about your prison work, your ministry? Go ahead. Are you there?
Hey, I'm here.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah. Why don't you talk a little bit about your prison ministry so that people can understand?
Okay, well, when I go to the women's prison, it's really, really sad. 99% of them have suffered some sort of abuse, whether it's sexual child abuse or physical abuse or mental abuse. They have suffered abuse. A lot of the women that I talked to were abused as kids, as teenage girls, you know, by someone that they knew, that the family know, someone in the family, a relative, them getting passed on. I think one was bad, where they were, one of them were human traffic, passed around in the family, sold to neighbors. I couldn't believe my ears what I was hearing. But was I surprised? No. A lot of them that started being abused at a young age, it was so easy for them to fall into drugs and alcohol because they got involved in it to numb and to medicate so they can forget. And then they start doing things, you know, going down the spiral road. Easy to connect with the wrong people, get in the wrong relationships, cause them to lose their freedom, and they're in prison today. Mm-hmm. There's lots of women that I know that are there that they shot and killed their victim. I mean, the abuser, you know, of domestic violence, and they're in jail. So it's really sad, you know. I always go in open-minded, and like I said, I spend time with them, and I allow them to speak, tell me, you know, whether they need prayer or they need listening ears, someone to talk to them. For me, I don't let anyone that is wasting time, I don't let them waste my time. Because it's like, because you're taking away from me trying to help someone else who do want the help. So it's like I set boundaries. And what I mean is some of them just want to get out of their jail, out of their cell block, so just to come out and come into the chaplain's office. But I'm not going to let you waste my time. If you ain't trying to get no help, if you don't want to talk about your issues, I don't even let you waste my time. And believe me, I know everybody in that jail. So my spirit will pretty much let me know whether I should see this person right now or not, you know. But I do a lot of listening, you know. They start sharing about their childhood. They start sharing how they became teenagers and how they ran away from home to be with their boyfriends because they were being abused at home or, you know, whatever. And, again, they just, you know, then they fall in love and then they give all their heart to a person that is controlling. And then I had some cases where the girl, it was a girl that didn't even really get in trouble at home too much. She just fell into the wrong crowd. And he led her to where it cost her freedom. All is because of love. Well, I love him. Yeah, okay. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
That's why you're here. Right. You know, mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. why you're here. Because you love him that much that you didn't care about yourself or freedom.
That's right. That's right.
So the majority of women in prison, and I'm going to say 99% of them, is they have suffered some sort of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute sexual abuse and domestic violence. That is the high rise of 98% of the women that are in prison.
That's right.
And they never got help.
You see, they were trying to say at one point that it was 78%, but I know better than
that's
that.
That's not true.
And you know,
no,
you know it.
That,
I know.
I
that's
don't,
what
I'm
saying.
Care
you
that.
Be careful, man. Go ahead.
I don't care about that statistic. I'm in those prisons.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
I'm
you
in
know.
There. I'm talking with these women face to face.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to the women's prison, and it ain't no freaking 70%. I don't know where to get that from. 99%.
Yep.
Out of 100 of women that are locked up is because of sexual child abuse as a child or domestic violence.
That's
the
right.
The other 1% is because of drugs led them into prison because they had to do what they had to do to survive. That's just that one little percent. Let's talk about the 99 that's up in there because they were abused as little girls and teenagers or domestic violence. Let's talk about those. That all is a percentage of jail population except 1%.
Well, you know, it's a rough thing. It's a rough thing. It's a rough thing. You know,
it is.
And this is what people they don't get it. You know, society doesn't get it. That's why, you know, one thing about NASCA, we do have the platform here. Oh, and you and I,
mm-hmm.
we always have such good conversations, and hopefully we're educating a lot of people. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so this is one way that we can educate people by, you know, having shows like this. But it's not good enough because we need to do it outside also. You know, we need people to become more proactive. And now, if they can make up their blasted mind, depends on what state you're in, if things are going to
mm-hmm.
close again and all this other stuff, I usually work with the daycare centers. I drop off information. And if they want
mm-hmm.
me to, you know, to talk to their staff, to educate the staff, because, you see, a lot of times these kids, okay, mommy and daddy may have a job, all right, but there's still a lot of abuse going on. So
mm-hmm.
the behavior of the children is a reflection of what's going on at house. At home.
I mean, they had me sat in a room full of number cops because I was used to open a lot of eyes. They ain't even all they were doing was doing their job. They ain't never took time to sit and wonder, you know, about a woman's past, not locked up in prison. And so when I bring them stories of what led them to have a number in prison, you know, you gotta have compassion. This could be your mom or your sister or your aunt. You're talking about somebody that was abused as a child, that was viciously raped, and their childhood was snatched away from them, and they never got help. Passed on from one bad thing to another. So they became an adult, and they were thrown out like trash, and they had to do what they had to do to survive. And you're talking about angry? Of course they angry. They've been angry ever since it first happened to them. They just never got healed from it. They never talked about it.
Well, that's the generational part of it, you know. So if your parents, you know, are beating each other up and all this other stuff, smashing things, oh, my God, how many things got smashed, you know, all these things that we witness as children,
mm-hmm.
And I certainly, what is going on here?
What's wrong?
Oh, my phone won't shut up. I'm going to put it in the other room. I'll put it in my drawer. What the heck was I saying? Oh, okay, generational. When it's generational like that, you know, many times that can be in the gangs too. And you have a lot of sociopaths in gangs. Okay,
yeah.
This is a bad thing. And the sociopaths, I'll start with that. The sociopaths, they are not the same quite as the psychopaths, because the sociopaths, many times, their behavior is environmental.
Mm.
Now, if they come from certain gangs, and I'll just say they're bikers, all right, they're bikers, whatever. And so they say to one of the gang people, could even be someone in their own family, you have to go whack someone, so-and-so, because they're a rival and they're giving us trouble and all this other stuff. Well, if they don't want to get whacked themselves, they go and they do it, okay? Now, this is how they're brought up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're brought up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they may, you know, they may kill that person. Now, with the sociopath, they can have a girlfriend. They can have feelings of love, believe it or not. They can, but they have a little small circle of people. They're not going to be the ones that are going to be aggressive and out and be party man or woman or whatever, this other stuff. They just think they're more inward. They're more inward, okay? And they can cry if something happens to a family member that they care about. They can have feelings, absolutely. The psychopath, on the other hand, is totally opposite, totally opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's so strange about this, you know? Well, They're the serial killers, the serial rapists, and all this other stuff. Now, some of those people, they've done studies, some of those people actually, and I've seen records, some of those people who are psychopaths actually came from wonderful homes. And they say, what the hell's wrong with this one? Why did this one turn out like that? There's no answer for that. Well, there's no answer that's been given yet. So you see, it's not environmental all the time, with like with the psychopaths,
right?
And that's kind of shocking and weird. They can have wonderful jobs. They can drive a wonderful car. They can have a wonderful house. They can get married, and they can have children. And then, like I like to say, when the sun goes down, then out comes the monster, all right? He goes and does his things, you know, and he'll take trophies and all this other stuff. So with the people who are in gangs, you know, and they go and they do certain things, that's where the generational comes in. And they, would I trust them? Not exactly. I mean, I think they're always going to be, you know, screwed up in the head because they didn't get help, like you were talking about. And even if they got help, I don't know if it's 100% certain that I would trust them even after they got help. I don't know, because they have their ways about them. You know, so with children are watching parents, whether they be gang members or, you know, street people, or if they become involved in just regular homes and other people on the outside, like you said earlier. No one knows what goes on behind closed doors, okay, unless you're inside of that house. And if they're not making much noise, you're not going to know it, okay? So, but these people who are abusing their children and who have been abused themselves, yes, that can turn into a cycle without being sociopathic. It doesn't have to be. But on the other hand, the outcome is very grim. You know, it's dim. They don't have good, even if they get help, because they have to go through all of their feelings, when it's generational. Generational is harder, okay, when it's generational. Grandfather, the son, to, you know what I'm saying, all the way down the line. Generational.
Yeah, absolutely. Generational, yeah.
You know that, too. You know that, too, because of what you went through. It's in your book, and you know that, with like with your grandfather and all this other stuff. So when it's in the family, the whole family unit, then that family unit is going to have a much harder time to heal, if they do heal. So these women you're speaking about, who are in prison, or the juvenile delinquents that I used to work with, who end up going to prison. They didn't get help in juvie, okay? And you don't really get much help in the prison system, I'm sure, when you go to prison. They house you, they feed you, you have an exercise room, you have you can watch TV, and they keep you in confinement. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not for long enough, especially today, but we won't get into that. That's political. All right. So what happens is these people, even though they serve their time, even if they're, say, a tier one rapist, okay, tier one rapists don't get that much time in jail because they're tier one. But we do know for a fact, Michelle, that the tier one rapists, okay, they may
mm-hmm.
have had as many as 128 victims. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't
oh,
mean that
wow.
each one is, well, let me finish here. If they break it down, so that can be 10 times. When I say victims, it could be the same person, but it's the action. So maybe 10 times with one kid, 5 times with another. You do the math yourself. It doesn't matter how you throw it in there. And these people, okay, they're not going to change. They're not going to change. Because what happens is they get back out on the street and they start doing petty theft. They found this out. That's kind of weird, isn't it, the tier ones. They get out on the street and they do some kind of silly stuff where they get caught. Maybe they go back to jail and all this other stuff. But then they go back. By the time, as time goes by, they go back to being the rapists. They do that because it's a part of their fabric. It's a part of their being. That's who they are. That's why I get so annoyed when they speak about pedophiles. Because pedophiles, they don't change. They haven't found anything. There's no magic pill or anything. There just simply isn't. You're born that way. And that's not about environmental conditioning. A pedophile is a pedophile, period. And you can't fix them. You can't fix them. I saw it through my family. I had two family members. Well, actually, I had three family members. One wasn't blood. Well, my brother's only my half-brother, but he still was blood. And that distant uncle in the first house. All right, so I saw 3 times in my family pedophiles. Not one of them changed. Okay.
Right.
And they've been doing decades of study, decades now, on pedophiles. And they cannot change. That's just the way it is. So I know there's some controversy going on here right now, but I'm going to tell you what I know, because you know what you know, and I know what I know. And I also know that they've done studies on pedophiles. So these kids that come from these terrible, terrible backgrounds that we've been talking about, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be pedophilia, okay, that they've witnessed or been a part of, and then the guy keeps getting loose, or the woman, again, the woman, you know, doesn't go to jail for long enough times, periods of time, they don't give them long enough sentencing. They're not going to change. And these kids, where they're brought up in a house, now what is our mission statement? What does it say? Physical, mental, emotional, sexual, and neglect. Those are the things that we deal with on NASCA. So children, they may not go through all of those 5 things as a child. But you know what? Trauma is trauma. And that's why we don't take that measuring stick, you know, to a situation. Because trauma is trauma. And when kids, and I've said this a couple times, I'll bring it up again tonight because it's fitting, it's appropriate. You have a child who is witnessing the people who are supposed to love and nurture them. You have a child who is witnessing that abuse, they're giving back and forth to each other. That child's brain is affected the same way as a soldier who is standing in the front line watching a buddy of his getting blown apart. Yeah. It's the same part of the brain. It has the same type, look it up, you'll find yourself, the same type of damage. So what do you do with something like that? That soldier, that's where PTSD first came from, World War II. In World War II, the men came back, and they had suffered horribly. They'd seen so many things. And they gave it a name, post-traumatic stress disorder, because of their behavior, because of what they were feeling, all the things that they go through when they see too much war and they see things, you know, people dying and all this other stuff. Well, when a little girl or a little boy is watching parents trying to kill each other, people that they love, all right? And now you're a military person. You know this. Now, if you're in war, your people become your people, and you watch out for each other's backs. And you get a bond. You get a bond with a lot of them. You form a bond. So children, they, of course, are supposed to form a bond, if they're able to, with their parents. So if they see, you know, a lot of stuff going on between mommy and daddy, blood flying, all right, and other things that happen. And with the soldier, he sees, too, the blood flying and the end of a life. We spoke about earlier how some people die, you know, from domestic violence. A lot of people die from domestic violence. So you have these two categories, but they're the same on the brain. And that's a shame. That's a shame. So you see, whether we're speaking about, you know, children who are witnessing domestic violence, or whether we're speaking about people who are, you know, adults, and, you know, they're victims of domestic violence because they haven't healed yet, the kid turns into the adult, and many times the outcome is the same. They have all kinds of PTSD disorders, whether it be complex PTSD. Complex PTSD is when you see something time after time after time after time. And that's where it differs from PTSD. It becomes complex PTSD. And when a child comes from that, they're going to turn into an adult who has many, many problems. And they can be either self-inflicted, or they can go and hurt other people. They can end up in jail. Or they can be having all kinds of problems with eating disorders. You know, maybe they're bulimic or anorexic. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they have all kinds of issues. And people out there, if you have issues, remember, you were the victim. And don't put the blame in the wrong place. So often, when we are victims of child abuse, what do? They try to say it's your fault. They make you feel like you're partly to blame. No. We were victims of child abuse. This is what we were, Michelle. We were victims. And today we're not victims. Today we are who we are. You do wonderful work. And I get out there and I do what I can too. I work with the homeless. You work with the homeless. We have a lot in common. And, you know, that's just the way it is. So today we're in a far better place. We didn't let all this define who we are today. We have moved ahead and forward. We put one foot in front of the other. And, you know, we still have a ways to go because we're never going to heal 100%, Michelle. You do realize that. I don't know if you do or not. But the truth of the matter is we're always going to have some kind of issue. What do you think about all of that? Can you hear me, Michelle? I know she's not feeling well. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm right here, sweetie. Yeah,
okay.
I'm right here.
I know. Are you okay?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I am.
All right, so anyway, I know you've been sick, and I thank you so much for coming on. Oh, my God.
Yes,
but
I'm so happy that, you know, in case anyone don't know, I have been diagnosed with COVID. And, you know, I've been under the weather. I'm getting better. It's just, you know, doing this hibernation, you know, it'd be some days that I'd be out of it.
I know.
It'd be some days where I'm really feeling more of a, like, for example, you know, they got people that say they have fever and they got nausea and they throwing up and, you know, I got all that's happening. So, you know, but I'm still here and even from home, I'm leaving myself open to be a listening ear or, you know, someone calls and they sometimes just need someone to talk to. Like, they just want me to listen. And that's what I do. I do when my phone rings and I say, this is Michelle, how can I help you? That is the truth. How can I help you? Do you want me to pray for you or do you want to talk? And so I'll listen,
mm-hmm.
You know. Cause,
well,
I
think you're amazing, Michelle, because let me tell you something. I know that you're not feeling well. And, you know, this COVID, mm-hmm. when you do get it, if you do get it, okay, it kicks your butt. It just simply does.
Oh, yes, it does. My God.
No, I know. I know what you're going through. I lost a couple of friends because of COVID. I did.
Yeah. And I lost a lot of people, girl. I lost a lot of people that didn't make it. I just thank God that he got his hand on me. And I was just chosen to still be here. And this wasn't my time. But this thing is serious. This COVID thing is real. So, you know, wear your mask. Wash your hands. Sanitize your hands. Me, personally, I put on some plastic gloves when I go into these stores. You know, when I got to get food or whatever, I got on gloves. I don't want my hands touching no buggy, no cart, no door, no nothing in the place of business. Because, I mean, people are nasty. And this disease that's out here killing people, this thing is real.
I know. I know. I'm aware of that. I was, like, in denial in the beginning. And I always say to myself, I'm too tough, it's not going to get me. You know,
yeah, okay.
I'll scare the blasted bug away. It's not a bug, it's a, I call it warfare. But anyway, the point
it
is.
It is a warfare. It's a virus that is deadly. And a lot of people are losing their lives. This thing is serious.
I know.
You know, a lot of people. And I'm looking at the statistics. Yes, I'm going to go there. Let me go ahead and put this out here. In Cincinnati, 2,500 people are on a ventilator right now in the hospital.
How many?
They ran out of room. 2,500.
Oh, my word. Oh, my God.
And guess what? No, you ain't heard the worst part. These are 2,500 people on ventilators that didn't take the shot.
Mm-hmm.
If they would have took that shot, they wouldn't be on the ventilator right now.
But then you have those that, you know, got their shots. I had that in my family, too, where they got the Pfizer shots. You know,
and
they
saying?
Got it. I don't know what happened.
Oh, yeah,
you're going to get it,
but the thing is you got a better chance of surviving if you take the freaking shot versus if you didn't take it at all. I'm a witness to that. It's the truth. I pushed for people to take the shot. You know, and then do your booster, you know, like when I get well, which I'm almost there, I am going to do my booster. I already had the virus shot. I'm going to take the booster.
Are you supposed to wait 6 months or 8 months? Do you remember?
It's not anymore.
So, well, you can get it sooner or something?
Yeah, I was told you now you can get it sooner. If you already had your shot, you can go ahead and take your booster. And I don't want to hear the fact that I'm just saying, but, okay, yeah, I'll do my boosters once I Matter of fact, in another week, I'll be going because after you get the virus, they want you to wait a couple of weeks before doing the booster, which it will be by the time I go take mine. So.
Well, I'm going to be getting mine pretty soon, I guess.
And I tell people, hey, I need to get this. I need to get it while it's free. You're going to turn around, going to look around, and you're going to look up, and you're going to wish you did, because they're going to end up charging. Right now, you can get the freaking shot for free and the booster for free. You're going to mess around, and it ain't going to be available for free anymore.
Mm-hmm. What the world
gonna be,
we live in? You know,
it's getting worse. I mean, look what's going on. I advise please go take your go get the shot. Is it, people say, wait, I heard someone say, well, I was told you're going to get it anyway. I mean, you know, it ain't going to stop you from not getting it. But I'd rather have the shot, which I got the shot, and when I got it, I'm not in the hospital with a ventilator down my throat.
That's true.
You know.
That's true.
Come on now, this thing. And then they got that, you know, they already got the third strand out, and that fourth strand is on its way. This ain't good.
It just goes on and on, Michelle. You know what I'm saying?
We're in our third year of COVID. This thing ain't no joke.
No.
I don't know why people are taking it so like it is. It's not.
I think what happened, and this is another way, you know, they know that people are going to get tired of it, okay? They know.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get tired of putting the gloves on. They get tired of wearing the masks. I go in the stores. Some people have masks on. And if it's not posted on the door that you have to wear a mask, then those who have the shots, like I got the two vaccines, and I had absolutely no problem with either one of those shots. It's the other shot that I had that has my arm half paralyzed because I can't bend it right. I'm doing PT for that. You know, the shingles shot. That was bad. And
oh my
Michelle,
God.
I spoke to someone about a week ago, and she got a shingles shot. And it took her 4 or 5 weeks before her arm was straightened out. Honey, we're talking about 7 months with me. You see, they hit nerves in me. They damaged me.
Wow.
People out there, if you're going through what I'm going through, look up Cirva, S-I-R-V as in Victor, A. Okay, Cirva.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a right way and a wrong way of giving a shot. And the people out there, this is affecting, it doesn't matter what's in the serum, it doesn't matter what shot. You give the shot the wrong way, whether it's a vaccine, whether it's a flu shot, or whether it's a shingle shot like I had, you do it wrong. And that person is up Schitt's Creek. Excuse my mouth. I'm living with pain every day, man.
I have gotten a shingle shot. But what happened was I was at the VA. They were giving me my annual flu shot, which I don't take anymore. I bumped that. They said, oh, we might as well just give you a shingle shot. I said, oh, okay. Man, I got sick as a dog before that day was over. I fell into such a sickness. I thought I was going to die. Laid up
it's
like that for 3 days. Yes. Mm-mm.
Very, very bad.
Mm-mm.
So I was supposed to go for my second. You know, you get two of those also. I forget how far.
You talking about for a single?
Yes. My PA said to me, she said, don't go. Look what happened to you. I said, I don't want to go. I don't want another shingle shot. No way. Because the vaccines, I didn't even feel anything. I'm telling you, I had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought to myself, they pump water in me? I don't know. You know,
wow.
Because I had nothing, no problems with them at all. But the shingle shot, oh my God. So I've heard other people, and in the PT class that I was assigned to go to, there's three others that have my problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going through the same thing I am.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think about shingle shot. I can't say it on air, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, okay, Michelle, we are at the end of the show. We had a very good show, a very informative
it was
show.
Good. It was, yeah.
Yeah.
It
you
was
know,
good.
You bet. I want people to think about, you know, what happens with kids with violence, you know, what they go through and how they turn into adults and how those adults feel that never got the help that they needed when they were a kid. That was the reason for this show tonight. So I thank you so much for coming on. And we've got, you know, you want to say a little prayer or something, that's fine. You put me, I don't know how you feel.
I just want to quickly say for the ones who are out there listening that, you know, go to the NASCA website and you will find a list of people's names with their phone numbers and emails. And I'm just going to pick out the two, which is me and Carol. We are night owls, so you can call us anytime, you know, and we will answer. If we don't answer, believe me, we will get right back with you. Because us being night owls, 9 to 10, we're on the phone already talking to somebody. So we'll get back with you, okay? You can easily, and so my name is Minister Michelle Bless, and that's Carol Levine. And if no one didn't tell you today that they love you, know that God loves you and we love you and we love you. And there's two scriptures I want to leave out with. One is Jeremiah 29, verse 11 through 14. That's Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11 through 14, and Psalms 91. Those are scriptures that you can read daily. Read it to your spirit, and it will absolutely comfort you. And, again, thanks, Carol. It's been a great show.
Well, it's always a good show when you and I are on, you know. And I think we do help educate a lot of people with what we've learned and what we've been taught, too. You know, a combination of both. And I don't know, Michelle. I'm going to look that 91 up. You said Psalm 91, didn't you?
Psalms 91. Yeah, it's not real, real big at all. It's one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible. It's the whole book. It's Psalms 91.
Okay, I'm going to look it up, exactly what it says. Because what people need now is hope. They need direction. They need direction, absolutely, with all the things that we spoke about.
But
they also
need hope.
Yes. Because without hope, there's nothing, you know. I mean, what is there? So many people have lost their jobs, and on and on it goes, and their lives and lives of the people that they love and all this other stuff. And it's just a very depressing time. And the fact that it's going on
for
so long. Yes.
So many years. That's why it's like, why isn't nobody not taking it serious? This is the third year. It's getting worse. So, you know, people do need hope, you know. They need hope, you know. You got people, like you just mentioned, losing their jobs. You know, people actually lost their homes.
It's terrible.
They got kicked out of their home.
Yeah.
Break my heart to hear that.
It's awful, Michelle. And you see, I have my own idea about what I do, but you know how I am. I can't talk about it on air. Sometimes I talk on Facebook about how I feel about certain things, and I think we should move in and do something, okay? And I'll get thrown off. And then I go back on 2 days later. One time I was writing something on Facebook, and this caption came across what I was writing, and it said, this is going to go to the New York Times. Whoa. Okay. So, I mean, we have to keep praying. We have to keep watching out for each other. And we have to keep hope and faith. And let me tell you something. Let's just hope that we have a better world someday because things are not good right now. So, all of you out there, we do love you. And we'll be back again tomorrow. I'll be hosting again tomorrow. I did Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week. And I always love it when Michelle's on. Because we get along famously, and we understand each other, and hopefully we always put on a darn good show, and I think we did again tonight.
I'm going to throw this out there. If my sister called me tomorrow, I would love to come on and support you tomorrow night.
All right. We're going to have a guest on tomorrow. I forget her name, but she's coming on tomorrow. And
I would love to be there.
Okay, I'll call you.
Okay.
I gotta get off because I have to close this down, honey. Okay.
Okay.
Good night. God bless everyone, and let's hope and pray for a better tomorrow. Good night, Michelle. Feel better, honey.
Good night, thanks.
Okay. Another tomorrow.
Blog Talk Radio.